Welcome to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm Graham Richmond, and this is your wiretaps for Monday, March 24th, 2025. I'm joined by Alex Brown from Cornwall, England. Alex, what's going on this week?
Everything's very good, Graham. Well, yeah, what's going on? I went to Malaga last week.
Yes.
That's why we're actually recording this episode before I depart for Malaga. So
that's right.
So it's a little bit of an odd, potentially odd episode, but hopefully still a really good episode, yeah.
I think most episodes are odd, Alex. Yeah. I mean, we're kidding ourselves. We're not really mainstream. So,
yeah.
but what kind of decisions came out last week? So people are going to be listening to this, as I said, on March 24th. There's a couple of key schools delivering those round two decisions, right?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Yale is probably the biggest US-based school targeted last week to roll out decisions. So let's just assume everything happened according to schedule. And Livewire was full of sort of Yale responses. Keenan Flagler, McDonough, or a couple of other schools with round two decision releases scheduled for last week, as well as INSEAD for round three. And Fuqua is actually releasing interview invites scheduled for round three. So, plenty of activity last week. This upcoming week is going to be bigger.
Yeah.
We've got Harvard, Kellogg, Columbia, Booth, Haas, Anderson, McCombs, LBS, Foster, Imperial, ESC, all scheduled to release round two decisions. Now, programs like Columbia, it might actually have occurred last week.
Yeah.
They're sort of, you know, by this date, we will have released. So a couple of schools are sort of using that language now. This upcoming week is going to be super, super busy.
Yeah, and this is maybe the penultimate week of decisions, because I know the week after we have still maybe Wharton and Stanford to come, right? So it's busy. Wow.
So it's this upcoming week and next week where the real big hitters are releasing their decision. Not, you know, obviously Yale, a very strong program last week, but it sort of tends to bubble up round two, about 4 weeks of sort of decisions rolling out, and we're in the, like you say, this week's the penultimate week.
Yeah.
Then the following week, and then there'll still be a couple of decisions coming out the weeks after. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Wow.
Lots of activity.
Yeah, best of luck to everyone waiting. You're waiting, please take the Clear Admit Spring applicant survey. This is for anyone who's thinking about an MBA or has already applied. Even if you got in round one and you're going off to school, this is still a good survey to take for you're eligible to take it. And you can do so at bit.ly/CASurvey25. It's all lowercase, all one word. And it really does help us. I mean, we do these surveys twice a year to better understand the applicant pool. We work with schools, all the leading schools, to kind of share this information. So please take the survey. It's really, I mean, to be really frank about this, it's kind of what keeps the lights on at Clear Admit to some extent. So take the survey. I know it's like 10 minutes. And I know people hate taking surveys, but these are actually kind of fun. I mean, they ask you questions about, you know, how you decided where to apply to business school, and who you talk to, and it's not a bad, it's kind of fun. I was actually going through it and looking at all the questions, and they're fun questions to answer, especially if you're in the midst of applying to school.
And assume it's all anonymous.
Yeah, it's totally anonymous. Yeah, and we're giving out Amazon cards. I think we're giving out like 30 Amazon gift cards or something. So you have a pretty good chance of winning one of those if you pop in and take the survey. Otherwise, Alex, we have a lot of events, as I've been saying, coming up, and we have a near final roster set for our virtual events in May, and we're going to do those on May 6th and 7th, and then again on May 20 and 21, and you will not believe this list of schools. I'll just run it down, but the first event has Tuck, Duke, INSEAD, LBS, and Ross. The second event has Harvard, Cornell, Carnegie Mellon. And there's still a couple of schools. I can't say which they are, but I have a good feeling as to what schools are going to join us there. And they may be located in the Chicago area, but stay tuned for that. On May 20th, we're going to have Berkeley, UNC, Darden, Foster, and Georgia Tech. And then on May 21st, we'll have Columbia, Stanford, Wharton, UT Austin, and Yale. So that's really exciting. Those are all virtual events happening in May. You can actually now sign up by going to bit.ly/app-overview25. And the reason it's called that is because this is the series that we do, which is kind of an overview of the application process at these leading schools. And so it'll be me emceeing with admissions directors from all these top programs. So it should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, and obviously this event's targeting folks applying next season, so the app overview for the upcoming season.
Yeah.
And I would presume, Graham, this is the first time you've got Harvard, Stanford, and Wharton all together at this series of events.
You might be right. I haven't paid close attention, but I think you're probably right. Yeah, so it's great to have all the top schools. And then the reason that we're doing them kind of early May and late May is because in the middle of May, we have our big in-person event in Boston. Really encourage people to come to that if you can, if you're anywhere near the Boston area. It's going to be a big fair. We have 24 or 25 schools now signed up. It's all the top programs. We'll do panels. There'll be free food, the fair, alumni from schools. It's going to be a lot of fun, networking, et cetera. So please sign up for that if you can. And there's a short link for that too, which is bit.ly/MBA Fair 2025. So yeah, lots going on, Alex.
May is our month to kick off next season, I guess.
Yeah, totally. The other thing that's been happening is we continue to pump out, you know, a lot of content on the website. And we did a big article that was, I believe, your suggestion. We were talking about this before we came on air. And this is a kind of primer on the executive assessment. So what was it that prompted you to ask us to do some more content on the EA? Because I know it's something you were thinking about.
Yeah, maybe any content on the EA. I'm not sure we have any. But if we do, it was definitely a couple of prompts coming through the AI bot and, Ask, Clear, Admit. So one of the really neat things about the Ask, Clear, Admit bot is we can see live what questions folks are having. Mm-hmm. Through the admissions process, again, all completely anonymous. But that then can inform our publishing schedule. And one thing that's come out of this is more interest in potentially taking the executive assessment, which I'm not sure that thrills GMAT, although I think it's their test, right?
It is their test, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting. I think there's another article we need to write, Graham. And I know we've written an article on test waivers, mm-hmm. And which schools allow for test waivers. But I think now we can crawl Livewire and look at the evidence of which schools are accepting test waivers. And I think that might reveal one or two additional schools.
Yeah, you might be right. And also, it'd just be fascinating to look at any trends or patterns in those who applied with waivers.
If you apply with a waiver, do you have a higher likelihood of ending up on a wait list? That would be my hypothesis.
I think you might be right.
At the very top schools.
Yeah. So in any event, so we'll see. So this article is a primer on the executive assessment. More schools seem to be accepting it. I know, I think Columbia, Duke, there are others that take it, maybe Darden. But in any event, it's out there, and it's a test that's made by GMAC, originally designed for executive MBA programs, but now in use for traditional MBA in some cases. So the other thing we did, Alex, is we continue to release these really nice Real Humans pieces with grads of MBA programs as part of our Real Humans alumni series. This past week, we caught up with Amy, who's an NYU Stern MBA. She graduated back in 2020, which I was really happy to see, because this series, I think, works best when we have people who've maybe been out in the workforce even a bit longer. So she's, been out there. She's a senior manager now at PepsiCo. She hails from Changzhou, China, originally, and she went to NYU as an undergrad as well. So she double dipped for the MBA. She must have had a great experience just studying at NYU, being in New York. She studied math and business economics as an undergrad, and she had worked as a senior strategy consultant at Ernst & Young for a few years before going back to do the MBA. And we asked her a couple of questions that I wanted to share her responses on. The first we asked her was, were there any surprises regarding your current employer's recruiting process? Now, remember, she was recruiting for PepsiCo, and she said, one of my final round interviews was a, quote, cultural assessment with a PepsiCo recruiter. I was surprised that we didn't discuss the job I was applying for at all. Instead, he made an effort to get to know me, what I care about, what I enjoy doing with friends, my favorite dish to make, and even my tips for working out virtually. This was in April of 2020 during COVID. It was refreshing to see that PepsiCo actively prioritizes hiring for both professional and personal compatibility, fostering an environment where people genuinely enjoy working together. So I thought that was kind of nice to hear that they're doing that kind of cultural fit interview.
Well, it makes perfect sense to me, Graham. I have a friend of mine, actually, who is totally unrelated to MBA admissions, but was interviewing for a quite a senior level position at a not for profit. Mm-hmm. And I told them there's three key areas that interviewers focus on? And it'd be good to get your feedback on this. Mm-hmm. Number one is competency, right? Mm-hmm. You've got to show that you are, you know, very good at the job you're interviewing for, potentially, et cetera. Number two is passion. You've got to show that this is something you're truly passionate about and interested in, therefore you'll work harder. And number three is likability. You've got to come across as someone that people want to get along with and enjoy working with, et cetera, et cetera, if you're working late at night and so on and so forth. And that likability, I think, dovetails really closely with what you just talked about.
Yeah, no, I think those are great. Those are good three, you know, kind of points. I agree with them all. And I think, yeah, it's true. I mean, especially now that people are back in the office, at least for in large part, yeah, you got to be able to work together.
Yeah,
and I
mean, so you can have the smartest person on the planet working for you, and they may be completely unlikable, and they may be completely passionless.
You're right.
And they're not going to be a valuable employee.
Yeah, exactly. So the other thing that Amy shared, and this I thought was good too, is we asked her, you know, any advice that you wish you'd been given while you were doing your MBA. And she said, and this is great, think beyond just the first post-MBA job and focus on how the MBA experience will shape your career 5, 10, or even 20 years down the line. The MBA isn't just about making a pivot or landing a role. It's about building a roadmap for a fulfilling career and lifelong learning. Spend time defining your long-term aspirations and fostering deep, meaningful relationships centered on sharing ideas and insights. So that's pretty good advice from Amy at Stern, no?
Yeah, it's absolutely brilliant. And that is, obviously the MBA can give you that short-term hit and that pivot, et cetera, et cetera. But to the extent that you can think long-term and the long-term impact, I mean, clearly that's where the real value is. So that's brilliant. Now, a question back to you. You said Amy was, it was Amy, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Is a Stern undergrad. Mm-hmm. Aren't they one of the few schools that you can, if you're a Stern undergrad, you can apply to the MBA and waive the GMAT?
Oh, you know, I don't know. That it's possible, but I'm actually not sure. That sounds kind of familiar. But
do you think that might be a reason why Stern gets more undergrads into their program? I don't know that, but I've seen that with a couple of programs, and I'm wondering if Stern is one of them.
I mean, I do know that a lot of, you know, programs have special kind of opportunities for people who are undergrads, or, you know, which could involve either starting a bit earlier, you know, or getting in when you're still in the undergrad program, or maybe there's test waivers, et cetera. So yeah, it's totally possible. But she clearly, I mean, they're in the article, which is quite lengthy. She talks a lot about why she wanted to go back and just, again, had a really great experience at NYU generally and just wanted to come back. So it was kind of an easy decision. She talked a lot about being in New York too and how that's an advantage. So so great advice from Amy. We'll keep more of those real humans coming from all kinds of top companies and out of top programs. So stay tuned. Alex, if people want to write to us, which they continue to do so, it's so fun to get these emails, just write to info@clearadmit.com. Use the subject line wiretaps. We've had a couple come in the last week. And yeah, just always appreciate hearing from y'all. I do think what we could really use are some reviews of the show. So if you happen to listen on Apple Podcasts, please leave us a review and a rating. It's a great platform for spreading the word about the show. And, you know, obviously if you're listening on Spotify, please be sure to rate us as well. They don't seem to allow for reviews still, but ratings always help too. And just spread the word. I mean, no one knows about the show unless you tell them, right? So it's a pretty small network of folks tuning in and week out, but help us to spread the word. Be really useful.
So what you're saying is our marketing department's a bit defunct. We're not spreading the word well enough.
We do some things, but it's just, I feel like, you know, it's so interesting. Sometimes I hear from people who listen to the show and they're like, oh, I haven't really looked at the website much. And then vice versa. You know, it's just like there's... So anyway, yeah. Alex, anything else you want to tackle this week before we get into our candidates for this time around here?
Let's kick on.
All right. So this is Wiretaps candidate number one. So our first candidate, and actually all three candidates this week, come from Decision Wire posts. It's that time of year where people have offers, so we're really going to dig in and start to talk about how they're making decisions. So our first candidate this week applied to Berkeley, Dartmouth, Duke, Harvard, Kellogg, Stanford, Wharton, and Darden. And they ended up getting three offers. They got into Dartmouth, they got into Fuqua at Duke with a $50,000 scholarship, and they got into Darden. There doesn't appear to be any money on offer from either Dartmouth or Darden. They are starting school this coming fall. They really want to get into consulting. They mention MBB or tier two consulting firms or, you know, kind of anything. They're just interested in consulting definitely as their career path. They had a 760 on the GMAT and a 3.3 GPA. They're located on the West Coast, and they actually say they want to get back to the West Coast, and they're, you know, looking to work out there. They do plan on visiting all these schools in April, and they're wondering if we have any insights as to where they should go. So, Alex, what do you make of this? I mean, it's kind of an interesting thing, right? They have three offers, but they're all on the East Coast, and they want to work on the West Coast. And I guess they had applied to Berkeley and Stanford, but didn't get in at either of those. So here's where they sit.
Yeah, I mean, obviously that would have made their life a lot simpler and straightforward if Haas had given them an offer or Stanford, given their goals, right? Consulting on the West Coast. So so Tuck, Fuqua and Darden are obviously very good schools and really good for, you know, providing opportunity and access to MBB and tier two consulting.
Yeah.
So they should feel comfortable about those choices. It's going to be a little bit more complicated getting back to the West Coast, potentially from these programs. As you say, they're sort of effectively on the East Coast, and most of their recruiting would be more focused on the Northeast, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, we've got articles that talk about this stuff. They probably should go review them just to see what percent of folks each of these programs is sending to the West Coast, and then look at how active is the alumni network, not just how many folks are going there, but look up the sort of alumni networks in Northern California, whatever it might be, to see when their next meetings are, how active they are, et cetera, et cetera. I think that would be really important. And then, you know, when you look at, you know, the caliber of these programs, you might argue Tuck is in a tier slightly above Fuqua and Darden. But it's going to be close. And I think with Fuqua offering 50,000, they say they're going to negotiate, but let's just presume negotiation could be challenging. I think they're going to negotiate. I forget. One of our folks are going to negotiate. But the point is that 50K might actually be the swinger here, Graham.
Yeah, it's an interesting quandary. And I think you gave great advice about, yeah, looking into the level of activity in those alumni clubs out west. I did look at the consulting stats. I mean, it's like 46%. And this is from the class of 23, because we had a nice article about MBB placements in particular, but also just percentage going into consulting, where we put all these schools side by side. And we saw that for the class of 23, it was like 46% out of Darden, 46% Tuck, 43% Duke. Now, all those went down in the last year because of the fact that the consulting firms hired less. But you can see they're all really close together. So it's not like you can suddenly say, oh, you want to work in consulting, you got to go to this one of the three. It's not that they're all really good at it. So it comes down to that sort of West Coast thing. I would look into it. I guess you can't underestimate the power of Tuck and the Ivy League, maybe. Maybe there's a better network out west, even if you think about all the Ivy League, and you can tap into that network potentially. But as you say, $50,000 from Duke is nothing to, you know, to sort of underestimate. I mean, that's not a bad amount of money, and that could be the tipping point. And I would imagine Duke has a great network out west. So yeah, they need to do the digging on this and look at the alumni clubs, like you say. But I'm sure they'll be, you know, they're going to do great at any of these programs. They're all really good.
Do you think Darden, because it's focused on the case method, you could make an argument that's a great, you know, potentially a better preparation for those that are transitioning into consulting versus returning to consulting?
Well, I mean, Darden has long had a reputation for being excellent with consulting careers. But when you look at the numbers, I mean, they're sending roughly the same percentage as some of these peers. So, but it is, in terms of the education, the case method is, you know, really fantastic for consulting. And we had actually, who was it? We had a Real Humans where we were talking about someone who'd gone to HBS recently who was talking about the value of the case method when it comes to you know, being able to think on your feet. So yeah, there's a point to be made. Although again, that money from Duke, and Duke being sort of a peer of Darden, or maybe even a hair ahead in rankings, typically kind of pushes it to the front, I think. So it's tricky.
Yeah, I wouldn't call them a hair ahead. I stick them right in the same tier. Right?
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, no, I think you're right. It's a difficult decision, and yeah. We can't really help them. Yeah.
No, but I mean, I think, you know, as we said, do the due diligence and figure out and go to these welcome events and see where you fit.
Yes.
You know, that's going to play a role too. Although I will say all three schools are these incredible, close-knit, welcoming, warm communities. So yeah. It's going to be, we'll see. They'll probably leave each one saying, I've got to go here. So anyway, I want to thank them for sharing their dilemma and for posting and stuff. So best of luck. Let's move on though and talk about Wiretap's candidate number two. Our second candidate this week, again, another dilemma. They applied to just two programs. They applied to Cambridge Judge in the UK, and they applied to Chicago Booth. What's interesting is that when they applied to Chicago Booth's MBA program, they were rejected, but they were offered a spot in Chicago Booth's executive MBA program. So they're sitting on offers from both Judge with a little bit of scholarship. They didn't specify how much, but they got some scholarship to Judge, and they got into the executive MBA program at Booth without any scholarship dollars. They're going to start in the fall. They would love to work in either consulting or tech. So they mentioned Bain, BCG, McKinsey, Google, Uber. Their GRE score was a 328. This candidate is located in Tokyo. They have 7+ years of experience in marketing and branding in Tokyo, but they're hoping to transfer to either tech or consulting in the US. They specifically state they're not really considering UK jobs. And they do note in their comments to us that Booth Executive MBA has a US edge, but few recruiting opportunities. And I presume they're saying that because, you know, it's an executive MBA program and many people are staying in their roles or, you know, just looking to kind of accelerate within their current role. And they wondered, how is Cambridge viewed in the U.S. job market? Any insights? And that's where you get to weigh in, Alex. So what do you make of this?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're going to find it very challenging with the executive MBA program at Booth. I mean, what are they going to be doing for their career during the executive MBA?
Right.
I mean, are they going to be able to stay working for their current firm remotely? Or how is all that going to flesh out? And I think they're going to be stressed a little bit because obviously the executive MBA isn't, you know, really geared up to, you know, for an aggressive recruiting aspect to it, just like the full-time MBA would be, because for the full-time MBA, you're giving up your career, your current career to do the MBA full-time, and during that time, you also spend a lot of time recruiting. So I just think the executive MBA is not going to be the right approach here. And, you know, Cambridge, it's a shorter program. It might then mean that the US recruiting is going to be challenging. I mean, obviously, Cambridge, very good program. It helped them in Europe, in the UK, etc. But they're going to have to really scrutinize what the alumni networks look like in the US for folks going to the US. So not for, you know, US candidates going to Cambridge, going back to the US. So that's something, a bit of a nuance to explore also. I think, frankly, Graham, I know we round three application deadlines are coming thick and fast over these weeks, but I would look very quickly at what top 16 programs in the US still have round three application deadlines open and apply. I mean, obviously, they've done a lot of the heavy lifting for applications. So, you know, applying in now shouldn't be as onerous. But, you know, if they want to transition to the US for a career and use a US-based MBA program to do that, it really likely needs to be a full-time program, not the executive MBA.
Yeah, I could not agree more. I mean, just looking at this and stepping back, you'd say, well, they just needed to apply to more or a different set of schools. I mean, if you want to work in the U.S., you should go to a U.S. program, especially if you're not already a U.S. citizen. So it's one thing if you're an American, you pop over to Cambridge, get an MBA, and then want to pop back to the States. You already have a visa. You're a citizen, right? I think it's a whole other thing to use the program in the U.K. to transition to the U.S. Now, with that said, if they wanted to work in the U.K. or were willing to do so, they automatically can work for 2 years after they graduate from Judge. That's a visa that's automatically given by the UK government. So there would be opportunities, but I think they would have to just sort of assume that they would be working in the UK. So if they're going to take that offer, that's how I would approach it. Otherwise, I could not agree more. And I was thinking of even maybe beyond the top 16, like take a school like University of Washington, Foster. I mean, this person wants to work potentially in tech. They would probably stand a decent chance with that high GRE score and interesting profile working in Tokyo. I mean, they could probably get into some of these programs late round and it would be worth it. Rather than just sort of like taking what they have these two offers, but they're maybe not the right offers for this person, you know? So,
yeah. And, you know, if push comes to shove, maybe just reapply next season in round one and, mm-hmm. and get the strategy more. You know, a more effective application strategy, because they've probably got a lot to offer.
Yeah.
And, you know, with the right set of schools in the US targeted in round one, and I know they have 7+ years of experience, so they're probably a bit nervous that they're getting at the longer end of the spectrum, but right. they could still justify that why now mm-hmm. and fit and so on and so forth. So yeah. So I just think right now that their options are really limiting their potential. And so forth. So we go.
All right. Well, hopefully they take that advice and move forward and figure something out, whether that's reapplying or adding schools right now and seeing what happens. So best of luck to them. And thanks for sharing the profile. Let's move on and talk about Wiretap's candidate number 3. So our third candidate this week applied to a bunch of schools. They applied to Columbia, Cornell, Dartmouth, Harvard, Michigan, MIT, Kellogg, and Stern. And they came away with a few offers. They came away with an offer from Cornell Johnson with a $30,000 scholarship. They also received an offer from Dartmouth Tuck with no money and an offer from Michigan Ross with a $100,000 scholarship. They're looking to start school in the fall. They want to work in tech. They list off companies, Amazon, Apple, Facebook, Google, the list goes on. It's all the usual suspects. They had a GRE score of 326 and a GPA of 3.6. They're located in New York. And they mentioned in their note to us, they said, assume I can negotiate scholarships to match. Choosing between Tuck and Ross for tech and New York City goals. So they want to work in tech, but in New York. And they say Tuck places 66% of their grads in the Northeast, but only 10% in technology. Ross sends 15% into tech, but just 25% to the Northeast. This feels like one of those word problems, Alex, that we would have had in like fifth grade. trade-off is clear. Tuck is better for New York. Ross is stronger for tech. That's what they're saying. So what do you say to this this person with their dilemma about where to go?
Well, Ross with the 100K is probably quite attractive. Mm-hmm. Whether they can negotiate to 100K at Tuck, I think, would be quite a big.
It's not going to happen.
I know you talked about that before we came on air. That would be a huge swing. If they could get the same level of scholarship, then yeah, Tuck's probably got the stronger network. Well, it has the stronger network concentrated in the Northeast, et cetera, et cetera. It's in a tier just slightly above Ross. It would make Tuck much more compelling. Than without the scholarship and stuff, but I think just right now with that 100K differential, Ross does appear to be more attractive. It's going to just take them a little bit more work whilst they're at Ross to do that level of recruiting to get them tech in New York, but they could use some of that 100K to, you know, allow them to do more networking in New York and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
So I do think 100K is quite a difference. Now, if Tuck came back and said, look, we'll offer you 50K or something, then yeah, it's going to become much more tricky.
Yeah, I guess the one thing I was also just thinking about is with tech jobs being somewhat down at most all of the top schools in terms of the percentage of students going into that domain, I wondered what this candidate's kind of backup plan is, because that could shed some light on, you know, how they view these schools. But I still think that, you know, Ross with $100,000 is sort of hard to walk away from when you're getting no money at Tuck and 30K at Cornell. Cornell arguably a peer of Ross and stuff. So yeah, it's tricky. But I also, just to reiterate that earlier point, I don't think you go from $0 scholarship at Tuck to 100. I think if you went to Tuck and said, oh, I've got 30 here and 100 there, what can you do? They're not going to come in at the same level because they see themselves as being in a slight tier above, right? So they're not going to give the same amount. So there's going to be a gap no matter what, I would think, in terms of the Ross to Tuck offer. So I will say many years ago, I went to an event in New York for the Michigan Alumni Club. University of Michigan Alumni Club, and it was impressive. I mean, there are plenty of, you know, Michigan grads, and they're very, you know, it's a very rah-rah kind of place. So I'm sure they're, you know, they could probably get a job in New York. And as they say, Ross has a slight edge with tech placements and the money. You know, you just cannot ignore the $100,000. So it's an interesting dilemma, but I think at this point, unless Tuck were to come in with a big number for scholarship, Ross probably is out in front.
I couldn't agree more, and I think we're getting quite decisive on these decisions for the last two folks.
So now, we'll see. I mean, obviously they'll weigh it. They can go to the welcome events and stuff and see what they can negotiate. But I want to thank them for sharing their profile. Alex, thanks for picking these out. It was fun to do a whole show on Decision Wire entries. It was just kind of a fun thing. And I'm sure we'll see more of these coming up ahead as people get more and more offers, hopefully these, you know, next couple of weeks. So it should be fun. And I'll catch you after your vacation to, you know, it's going to be fun. Are you going to come back tanned, rested and ready, I guess?
I'll come back. I'm not sure about the tan, rested and ready, but my hope is coming back. Yes. No, looking forward to a couple of days of a bit, hopefully a bit of sunshine on the, is it considered the Costa del Sol? I don't know if it is, but Malaga. Yeah, absolutely fantastic.
Sounds like fun. Yeah. All right. Well, I'll see you next week then.
Yeah. Very good. Stay safe, everyone. Take care. Good luck.